Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Talking 20 years of 24. We are now just over a month away from the 20-year mark of the pilot airing for the TV show 24, which we're all just a little bit of fans about. We can talk it chapter and verse, and that's what we're here to do. Want to say right off the bat, there will be spoilers during this conversation. We assume that you've watched 24 when we have these discussions. So if you have not, I recommend that you go back to whatever streaming service you have and move through season 4 of 24 so that we don't ruin anything for you, because I know that when we were watching it in real time, if anybody had ruined anything for us, that would have really not been good on way too many levels. So again, there are spoilers as a warning. I want to remind people, November 6th is coming up and we are doing an event. You can register for that at www.24convention.com, and all the details are there, and we can get you involved, and we're going to talk to cast and crew and fans and have a good time. Other than that, I'd like to introduce our team for today, for today's roundtable. If you can go one at a time and introduce yourself and the name and the city that you are in, and we'll get going.
Okay, my name is Nicolas. I'm in Santiago, South America, Chile.
Very good.
I'm Keith. I am from Palm Bay, Florida.
Hello, I am Yahya Saber from Morocco.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Mike, and I'm from England, UK.
Very good. Welcome. Thank you very much. Which is where the show ended. It ended in England, didn't it? With Live Another Day. He lived another day in England. What's the guy's name? Jack Bauer. I almost forgot his name. I'm just kidding. I didn't forget his name. So, this is the first season. We're going to talk today. We're discussing season 4 of 24. And this is the first season, in my opinion, where the creators decided to really let the fans know how much they loved us. Because instead of there being like these 6-week gaps between episodes and cliffhangers, and then you had to wait over Christmas over 4 weeks, they decided to push it back to January. So as of season 4, they started in January, and they would run January right through to May, which was beautiful because at least you knew every week there was going to be a new episode. Not only that, again, for those of us that have watched it, it sounds like I think most of us have been watching since at least season 3, is that season 4 was also the season where they decided to do a 2-night premiere, which, again, amazing. Made it worth, you know, waiting the extra 3 months for the show to come back. They did a 2-night premiere. It was basically watching 2 movies. You watched a movie on Sunday night, and then you watched a movie on Monday night. And so you had these back-to-back 4 episodes all kind of at the same time, and it was really amazing. You got to remember, this is pre-Netflix, pre-streaming. Our expectations have changed a bit, but they really, you know, decided to show us that they really appreciated us and loved us and not making us wait more than that. So as I go to this season, I'm looking at the people that we met. When we do the interviews with cast members, they talk about how every year was like a new cast. And that idea got away from me until I started to really look at everybody that gets introduced every particular season. So this season we met the Hellers, Charles Logan, the Arras family, Edgar Stiles, Curtis Manning, Aaron Driscoll, Cheng, and Paul Raines. And somewhere in there was Walt Cummings. and the kid from Witness. That's easy to forget that there was a movie called Witness with Harrison Ford years ago, and there was a little kid who was a witness, and now we got the kid who's all grown up, and now he's a witness to something else. He can't get away. He's been very typecast. So, Dave Forsey's Jack, now working for the Secretary of Defense, James Heller, after being fired by Aaron Driscoll, special agent in charge of CTU, caught up in an elaborate terrorist plot, which involves both men and the daughter of Heller, Audrey Raines, who doubles as her father's chief policy agent and Jack's lover. Jack must work with CTU and Driscoll to uncover what is happening. Again, one or more moles is revealed to inhabit CTU, aiding the terrorists. That was description is from 24fandom.com. Very handy site whenever you want to look up anything that's related to 24. So, here's where we're going to start. Season 4 is the first time that we open with Jack happy, okay? If you remember, the last time Jack was happy was the pilot episode where he was playing chess and they were hanging out and they just kind of worked things out and they were, Kim wasn't on board yet, but they were still kind of getting back to being a happy family. And you saw Jack smiling, you saw Jack enjoying himself, joking. And so that was the pilot. So now, 3 full seasons later, this is the first time that we see Jack happy again because he's in love, as we saw in the description, with Audrey. How did that hit you to see Jack kind of happy again?
Well, I think they actually kind of touched on that in the trailer, which was, I mean, obviously our first, hint of season 4 was actually through the trailer, and it actually starts off, with Audrey. I remember Audrey and Jack kind of in the hotel room, getting ready, and she, and it was the whole thing. And I remember seeing it, and I was like, really? Because remember, season 3 ended with him breaking down in the middle of the car, just crying, losing himself. Yeah. So I was like, okay, cool. There's a time jump, obviously, as usual, and he's happy now. But we all know in 24 land, that won't last. And by the end of that episode, it was over with. But no, I really enjoyed seeing a different side of Jack. I mean, we've never seen him, as you said, happy since the first episode of the show. So,
yeah, and in the opening a few minutes of the when Jack is with Audrey, you can tell with Jack that he's just got a very much sense of calm. Calmness and mm-hmm. And he even said to Audrey that if he could have joined other agencies if he wanted to stay in field work, so he managed to actually get out of field work and done a different type of job. So that sort of signifies to the fans that he's actually tried to break away from field work and sort of turn his life around a little bit, mm-hmm. and he's with Audrey, and he seems happy and quite content, even though that he's heading back into CTU. But as we all know, in typical 24 style, that there's always going to be a spanner that's thrown into the works pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, also he was very well. When every time he's separated from CTU, he seems to be in control, right?
Yes. Yes.
And we see him more relaxed, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
With Audrey, he seems to be enjoying himself doing this job.
Yeah. Yeah. He's almost chill. He's almost like he's very, very relaxed. I don't know about you, but I've gone back to places where I used to work and I didn't enjoy it. It always felt strange. So I can't imagine going back into CTU where your wife has died. It has to be jarring. As Keith said, we know that it's not going to last, just like it didn't last in the pilot episode. It didn't even last the full episode. And in the same way, we know it's not going to, but I remember, as you said, watching the commercials and seeing Jack happy and going, that's not the guy I saw a couple months ago. This is very, very different. But at the same time, like almost enjoying it for him. Cause the running joke is, well, when does he eat? When does he relax? And that kind of stuff. We get to see him relax. So, yeah, it's a very interesting place where they decided to start season four. They didn't start it with the crisis right off the bat.
Because it always amazes me that whenever the show dares to go with big changes,
yes,
it works really well.
Right, yes.
Because we had in the previous seasons, for instance, the CTU that was run by Jack, then Jack and Tony, along with Palmer, and it feels like almost as they had a carte blanche, I think is the expression.
Yep.
But now you have John Keeler. No, Keeler was the president, right?
You're right, yeah, Keeler was, yep, the president.
You have Driscoll, who fired Jack, right? There's a brand new CTU, a whole bunch of new characters, you know. So that big change, you know, it was good. It was refreshing.
And one of the other things, too, that you notice about this season is that when they come back, you see actually names and people you recognize. Certainly William Devane had been around forever. William Devane is an actor that people have known for years. He played Heller. Edgar. Louis Lombardi came from The Sopranos. There were I didn't mention Arlo Vosloo. You know, Habib Marwan came from, you know, everything. At that point, he was doing a lot of films. He did The Mummy. He did all kinds of stuff. So you start to see kind of bigger names coming to the show. It had started before this, but this is kind of the season where you really start to see, you know, people that you recognize that are movie people. And again, adds to the idea that this show was making TV more like a movie. By drawing that kind of talent as well. Anybody else that stood out as far as the new cast?
I think, too, season four was the first, if I remember correctly, the first season that really, like, you could tell the marketing push for the show had reached another level. Because if you remember, season three's DVD was the first DVD that had the prequel, the 10-minute little prequel that kind of in between.
Right.
And that was the beginning of, like, okay, buy our DVD, watch season three, you know, check out the prequel, and all that. And then having, as you said earlier, Ryan, the 4-episode, 2-night premiere, which gets you, I mean, that's equivalent of one disc of a DVD set.
Exactly. So
you got a good chunk of the story to be like, okay, I'm invested now. If I've never watched this show, I'm invested. I don't care.
I
want to see what happens. And I think that's what helped the transition of 24 into like just being another, because I remember season 4, 5, and 6-ish was like the pinnacle of like the 24, like the ratings were through the roof, and obviously nominated for Emmy awards and everything else. So I really agreeing with Nicholas, it's 24 is better when it's, you know, like with these time jumps, changing every show. It was like a reboot every single season, the same characters, but it was like these characters have evolved. You know, Jack is happy now, you know, he doesn't work for CTU anymore, you know, and that's one thing I've always thought was different than any other show.
Yeah. One of the interesting things that I'm remembering, I didn't realize until we were talking about it, is that they did the 4-night premiere, and then they made, I think it was Tuesday at Walmart, and you could buy the actual disc. So they did Sunday night, Monday night, 4 hours of show, and it wasn't the full season, but you could buy the full disc. And I remember, like a goofball, going and buying it and watching it over and over and over again. Oh, you got it there? Yeah.
It was season 6, but season 6 premiere, and it had the first 4 episodes.
That might have been the first season they did it. I can't remember which season they did it, but I remember running to the store the next day because I had to watch it over and over and over again. So, that's all part of the marketing. Like, they knew... We can't just leave it out there and hope you're going to find it. We have to make sure that you can get to it and have access to the show and watch it repeatedly. Because, I remember having people over to watch that disc, you know, in the week before the next episode, so they were all caught up. Yeah, I was very much about getting people to watch this show with me. That became a mission for several years. So the other big thing about this season... is the bigness of the things they did. Like, in retrospect, the kidnapping of the Secretary of Defense was certainly the first crisis that they had to deal with. But they took down Air Force One, right? Like, those are both cataclysmic events. Now, even more so in retrospect, how big those things were even compared to things that they did later in the series, that's a big deal. The idea that they take down Air Force One, and sometimes we forget that.
And if I remember right, during that episode, I couldn't. Did they ever actually say Keeler survived?
No, as far as I know, I was looking into that the other day too, because we saw him. Didn't we see him move, or was that an extra feature?
If I remember watching the episode, it's been a couple of years since I've seen season four, but I remember it kind of went to black, like it was like you heard the, you know.
Yeah, I don't know that Keeler, died.
Yeah,
you know, I know
that they rescue him, right? And they get to him, and he was alive.
Right. Yeah. So I don't know how that was left. I don't know how it was left. It's
that thing with Bruce. I don't know what happened to Bruce.
Bruce was left alive. I know that for sure. At the end of it, Dina was killed, but Bruce was alive. Yeah. I have ideas for the new season of 24, and I think I've mentioned them a couple times on the podcast. The idea of loose ends, and I said those are what I would call loose ends, right? Those are people that.
Right.
Probably are upset with Jack or with CTU, somebody like Bruce who lost his family, for example, or Miles Papazian, which we'll get to next, who lost everything. The last,
I hate
I'm jumping. That's the beautiful thing about 24 is that when somebody's really good, you really hate them. And there were people on this season. Walt Cummings. We meet Walt Cummings on this season. And Walt Cummings is not. I mean, I remember not liking Charles Logan, during this season, right? Because he condescended to President Palmer on several occasions, didn't he?
Yes.
Did you get that sense?
Well, you get to see shades of his new of what we will see of him in season five.
Yes. But yep.
Sometimes he would snap at Mike Novick.
Yes.
Or David, but
with the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick, so I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It's those brief moments of evil that we see.
Yes. Well, I'm happy. Let's talk about Charles Logan. Because this is the first time we've met him, right? And what was your opinion of Charles Logan during that season four?
I hated him at first.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
He seems like the sort of person that's quick to panic.
Yes.
He seems very sort of panicky sort of a person, mm-hmm. and he is very quick to get angry about something or to belittle someone. And
Charles Logan did not have any idea how to run things on the administration.
Not at all. I agree. He didn't even know how to run a criminal organization, but he definitely didn't know how to run the president. Here's the thing too. This is my first impression of Charles Logan during that year. Was it Eisenhower that had the sign in the White House that said the buck stops here, right? The idea that was, regardless of what happens, I'm accountable, right? I'm the president, right? And that was the mentality of the phrase "the buck stops here," is that if something goes wrong in this administration, I'm going to take accountability for it. I'm going to take responsibility for it, And that carried through for a lot of years. That concept has been forgotten for many years. But the idea was, if anybody's going to be responsible, it's going to be me. And Charles Logan was the actual opposite of that. Because all he said was, was it you? I'm going to blame Palmer. I'm going to leave this on your doorstep if I did it. And you saw the exact opposite. I think because he didn't really ever want to be president, right? He got pushed into that role with Keeler, and then all of a sudden he's president. And when you rewatch those scenes when they've announced that he is about to be sworn in, the look of panic on his face, you only see that again when he's facing Jack Bauer. Like, he has
some five.
if you go back and watch the press conference where he finds out that he's now going to become the president, he looks terrified. And we should be terrified, because we learn later what that's going to mean. But yeah, that to me, that sums up Charles Logan. And really, that really sums up the actor that played him, because he played him so well. And many people have said over the years that he looked a lot like Nixon. And he said, I pulled some of my characteristics, my mannerisms from Nixon without trying to be Nixon. But he certainly resembled him on many levels. But his character also resembled Richard Nixon on many levels.
And would also, if you notice, the scenario in season five, the staging of where he's working from.
Oh, yes, yeah.
It looks a bit like in 60-ish, 50s, 60s style, you know?
Yes, yes. It's, by the time he gets to season five, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely, but, yes.
Also, you don't really know that he will be a villain. You know,
right.
He does bad things in season four.
Right.
But you don't see him as a potential villain yet.
Well, yeah, you think, you kind of think he's too incompetent to think as a villain. That's exactly. That was the perfect, he was a puppet. I mean, that's basically what he ended
Hello,
up
Hello, Ryan.
To that, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he's definitely a puppet. And again, thrust into the position that he probably would have liked to aspire to maybe one day, but certainly wasn't ready for it when he became. And like I said, pointing, who can I blame, was the mode for him as well. Very good.
Because he's always worried about his image also.
Yes.
How people will see him.
How people will remember him. Yes, absolutely. 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 Now, do you, the idea of kidnapping the Secretary of Defense and basically putting him on Zoom is what they did, right? They held a trial that the world could see. I love the fact that they invented technology that didn't exist yet. Because, yes, there was video conferencing, but the idea that you could broadcast to, that anybody could see it, wasn't there when season four aired.
Mm-hmm.
Even watching the old phones, you know, knowing that those phones can't do what they were making them do. I grow more impressed by what they did on that show with each year, because the things that they're describing that they're doing with CTU is now being done. Like, it's now we do it from our phones, right? But you couldn't do that with a flip phone. But somehow they pretended that you could, and we believed it.
I believe in season six, they show Jack searching for a GPS coordinate, yes, with a flip phone.
I still have my flip phones. I know they couldn't do that, right? So the idea of kidnapping Heller, I mean, you know, this massive character, and they immediately storm and take him and put him on trial.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, that's a bold thing for a TV show to do in general, to actually take not a character, a person that exists, but an actual position that exists, the president, the Secretary of Defense, and put them in direct danger. I don't know that you could quite do that right now in TV. I don't know.
They did it with I think that they went over in Designated Survivor, right?
Yes, right. Yeah, they wiped out everybody. You're right. Maybe it's just because Kiefer's involved.
Yeah.
I guarantee it. The Designated Survivor meetings, they said, "Look, this has got to be bigger than anything 24 has done."
Yeah.
And arguably, at least that first episode, they did do something bigger than going after, you know, was it the Capitol that blew up?
Yes.
Which is kind of frightening to talk about now. But anyway,
It's funny. The only other show I could think of would be like Homeland, which obviously Howard Gordon was directly involved with either.
Right.
I know in the past season, they killed the president in that season. So spoiler alert.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know it's not done very often where they go that big. Yeah.
I've enjoyed the conversations we've had with Howard and people like that have said, or was it Kassar? Kassar said he went into a meeting, his first meeting, and joining the show, and they said, this is what we're going to do, and I think it was the Hacksaw. And he said, they walked out of the meeting and said, well, we're doing it, and walked out of the meeting. And he said, he's standing there going, are we going to get fired? Like, what's the deal? And he said, you have to commit to, you know, you can't back down. You know, almost like a Jack Bauer approach, right? If you're going to do this, if you're going to, you know, take somebody hostage, if you're going to rob a convenience store, right? Then you better have a really good reason to rob the convenience store.
Go big or go home, yeah.
Go big or go home, exactly, exactly. You know, it's the first time I thought about that. This whole TV show is about go big or go home. Absolutely, absolutely. I did watch, because this was also to compare, they started the same year. I watched Alias this week for the first time in several years. I watched the pilot, and I watched the finale. And as much as I liked Alias, it didn't go as big as it should have. Like, when you compare this show, a lot of people, because they started at the same time, there's comparisons that were drawn, certainly when it was on. Alias would not go as big as 24 would go. They probably lost a lot of battles to the network as to try to push the envelope, whereas 24 was all about pushing the envelope, all about shocking us and waking us up, which certainly they did. Yeah. Any favorite parts of season 4 that come to mind?
Well,
I think
when Paul Raines is that dilemma.
Which one?
When Paul Raines is on the operating table and
oh yeah, Paul Raines
and that Chinese guy that they're trying to that's got info of Marwan. I think that particular moment is quite profound.
Yeah, the Paul Raines moment had so much going on because of his relationship with Audrey. And because it was a call, like I said, go big or go home. That was a go big or go home moment where he said, this is what we're going to do. And this guy gets the operation and this one doesn't. Knowing what his personal, you know, knowing what he was going to risk personally. You know, the good of the country versus the good of Jack Bauer certainly came into play in that moment.
You know, though, during that scene, I don't think that Jack would have killed the doctor.
Right.
If push comes to shove, I don't think so.
Yeah, right. If it came down to it, hard to say.
But my favorite moment would have to be when Tony came back.
Yes.
When he rescues Jack and Audrey.
Yeah.
I like that moment.
I watched that about an hour ago again. I just had to watch it again to rev me up for today. I was like, yeah, that was... How would you describe that moment? What excited you about that moment?
I completely blew up because I never pay attention to the credits in the beginning of the
right,
episodes.
Right, yeah.
So I didn't see Carlos Bernard there, right? So it was a total shocker for me. I loved that moment. And I watched it on cable, you know. They aired it on Mondays over here.
Yeah. I refer to that as a Superman moment when he just swooped in. It did that. The quote was, "Who are you calling? The only person I can trust now."
Trust. Like, exactly.
And again, I remember watching it and going, "I don't know what I don't." He's got lots of people that you know that I can think of. I didn't have a clue that it was going to be Tony. I remember being completely shocked by that.
That was a great way.
They credit him right in the beginning of the episode.
I didn't pay attention either. I remember. I didn't see his name at the beginning. I'm glad I didn't.
They do, but I'm not sure.
I was glad I didn't. Yes.
And the happiest moment also is when Tony reunites again with Michelle Dessler.
Yes. Yes. Because we go to, this is the season where we go to Tony's apartment, right?
Uh-huh.
Tony's not living his best life. Let's just say that, right? Tony's not in a good place in general. But when he reunites with Michelle, it's all is right with the world, at least in that moment. I remember that.
I think one of my funniest moments was the fact that he was drinking alcohol out of his Chicago Cubs. Yes. They found a way to bring back the Chicago Cubs mug, and they were drinking alcohol out of in his apartment. I thought, I was like, they brought it back. That's awesome. Yep.
And I will say this too, like in that Carlos Bernard interview that we did, you get the sense that he, as much as Kiefer was, you know, had say over the show, I almost have the impression that Carlos Bernard had a lot of sway with how things were going to go, because he talked himself back from the dead, which is amazing. Talked himself back over and over again, but he just has a real, there was a real confidence to Carlos about his role in the 24 world that most people said when they got the call, they just went, okay, that's what happens. You die on 24. And he was like, well, no, maybe there's another way. And I just get the impression that's who he is. Like, he just seems very, very confident in his abilities and what he brings to the table, and the value that he brings to the table, and the value of that relationship with Michelle. I mean, really, we said that was, at least on the first to the second season, that was the love story of season two. And I always say that was the awkward first date. No, yeah, thank you for bringing that up, because you're right. Tony and Michelle reuniting after being estranged was a big deal. That was a huge deal.
And Ryan, can you tell us the real responsible for the murder of David Palmer?
The person who was responsible for the death of David Palmer, ultimately?
Yeah, the real one.
The real one. Yeah, what are your thoughts? That's a good question. Because there were a lot of actors involved. A lot of players involved. Yeah,
Jack's brother.
The first one was...
Who was the one that killed David Palmer, or that ordered the hit on David Palmer, in your opinion?
I think it was Jack's brother, right?
Graham. Yeah.
Graham.
Graham, definitely. Graham.
Also, I forget his name. Will Patton's character.
Will Patton. Season 7.
Yes. I forget his name, though. I forget his character name. The guy that was ultimately behind everything, like Edward.
The one Tony went after.
Yes.
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 Adam Wilson.
There you go.
Thank you. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. But also Logan, right? I mean, because you know, Logan certainly had a hand in a lot of that was going on. And certainly from where Martha stood, it was Logan that did that.
Don't forget that other man. And in the last episode of season seven, Mr. Wilson.
Yes, Mr. Wilson. Yes. Here's what I wish I would have asked several of the people that have been on the show, several of the guests we've had. I go back and I kick myself for not asking. I hope I have a chance on November 6th to ask this question. But the idea was, did they know who Graham was, right? Because I forgot. I watched, we'll get into Graham later, but I forgot how much Graham was a part of that whole story. We're moving into season 5, but that's okay.
Pretty sure, though, because he did show up in season 4.
5.
Or no, he in 5. You're right. You're
5. Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. We're jumping ahead, but we'll.
Got you.
But no, that's good. That's a good question. That's a good question.
And
don't forget that Jack Bauer spent 2.5 years in a Chinese prison.
Oh yeah.
Because of his brother.
But that's ahead. That's next season.
Yeah.
So in season 4.
But in season.
This is the first time we see. This is the first time we see.
In season 4. Yeah.
This is the first time we see Chloe cry. Do you remember that? It was Andrew. Andrew, who is Lucas Haas from Witness, was on the run and he almost got killed, and Jack saved his life at the last, and Jack pushed it to the very last possible minute. Chloe was in suspense the entire time. And I'd forgotten there was a moment where she leaves her seat, she goes into the bathroom, she makes sure that nobody else is in the bathroom, and she just sobs. And it was like, that was the first time you saw Chloe show any kind of emotion, mm-hmm. right? And I think, certainly from discussions we've had too, Chloe was not meant to be on the show more than a season, right? We had season 2 where you had Sarah Gilbert, right? And she was on for not even half a season. Or you had other people in similar roles, Janine right. Garofalo in similar roles, but none of them lasted as long. And I think the idea was that Chloe didn't really fit CTU, right? But this is the season where we really start to see Chloe become part of, you know, the of 24, to the point where we get to live another day and it's all about Chloe. He's all about rescuing Chloe, but we start to see Chloe's character kind of more to her than we saw the first time we met her.
Wasn't it this season too, the first time where she pulls out the gun and shoots the guy through
yes.
the... Yes. Like, that, I was going to say, so she grew up a lot. Between
yeah, she did, yes. Yeah, yeah. She absolutely did. She absolutely did. The other thing I like too about this, when we brought up a Tony Superman moment where he rescues, if you go back and watch that scene again, which I did an hour ago, there are two really cool things about that moment. You see Audrey with a gun. And she's firing back at the guys like she's done it before. Obviously, Secretary Heller's had her on a gun range because she's not trying to figure out how to use it. She's shooting back like she's a mercenary. And the other thing, and if you, again, this is something I'd never noticed before until today. Just before Tony comes in, Jack has run out of bullets. Right, it's a total yes. like cartoon scenario. And the last thing he does, I call it his Captain America moment. You know, where he literally turns the gun around and he thinks he's going to pistol whip three guys who are like fully armed. And he's and the look on his face, go back and watch it. The look on his face, he's convinced, and he probably would. He was going to pistol whip three guys that were like 4 feet away from him, ready to shoot him dead.
He was ready.
And I'm like, nothing sums up Jack Bauer quite like that. Like, he literally was convinced, and he would have done it. He would have taken out those three guys.
Well, that's what Kiefer said in during the interview. Jack Bauer was the guy who would go into a battle even knowing that he was going to lose.
Knowing that he was going to lose. Absolutely. Absolutely. But it also showed that he needed Tony. I mean, I think that, to me, that the statement, the only one that I can trust, right? He's the only person I can trust, tells you how deep that relationship was for years. You know, in right. the interim years, right? He couldn't. CTU was compromised, but Tony will back me up, which uh-huh. is pretty amazing, really.
Ryan, what about Mandy?
What about Mandy?
Yeah,
she shows up in this season. Yeah,
she does. That's right. I forgot that Mandy showed up in this season. Is that the parking lot scene? The parking garage?
Yeah, yeah. I think right. She got the immunity.
This is her pardon. Yes, yes, you're right. Because Palmer was still alive, this would have been the last season. You're right, because Palmer recognized or realized they pointed out who she was. Boy, thank you very much. I forgot about that, Mandy. Who is?
That is another question. Why she didn't appear in the rest of seasons 5, 6, 7, 8, 9?
That is a good question. Yeah,
in other projects or
with Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick, so I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I welcome.
Maybe.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I know she was fairly busy at that time in general. But as I've been very clear about on this podcast, Mandy's in the top 5 characters for me for 24. For so many reasons. The first is that really we only know her name is Mandy because that's what she said in the pilot. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's her name. I don't know if that's an alias, right? And we take it for granted that she's Mandy. But I totally forgot she does show up near the end of season 4, and in the parking lot,
almost kills Tony.
And almost kills Tony. Yes, yes, yeah. Mandy.
I remember that being my first. Oh, shit moment, basically, of the season, because remember, we hadn't seen Mandy since season two, the very last scene of season two.
Yeah.
And I remember her coming back and it's like, oh, wow, something, you know, are they going to finish her storyline, whatever? And then obviously she gets a pardon and goes on her way, and who knows what happens to her. But
Yeah, since the handshake was the last time we saw her. What's interesting, too, about that was the fact that David Palmer had to be a part of the group that was pardoning her for trying to kill him. Right? Like, how, what a kick in the head. And again, it shows you go big or go home, right? Because he could very clearly say, well, wait a minute, she's a criminal. She tried to assassinate a sitting U.S. president. We need to prosecute her to the fullest. We've been looking for her for how many years, right? Because at that point, they had actually pinpointed that that's who it was. They had the photo and the whole deal, right?
Right.
But that also shows you kind of the back deal, you know, deals, backdoor deals that get made that would keep her alive. But I remember the look on David's face.
Yes, she felt a little bit like Nina. You know, she goes to the best to the best bidder. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
Whoever pays, she's up to it.
Yeah, yeah. Right? Oh, I'm so happy you brought up Mandy, because I forgot about that. Boy, that's a... I didn't do as much of a rewatch of season four as I did with season five, but boy. Yeah.
When I thought that they had killed Tony.
Yes, yes. That's a big chopper. Well, and here's the other thing about Mandy, too, is that she tweeted during the filming of Live Another Day. She tweeted, boy, and I followed her on Twitter at the time. She said, it's so nice to be back on set. And I went, oh, and I waited. So I'm pretty convinced that there's probably footage of her that didn't get used. And I think it was either season eight or Live Another Day. But there, I feel like there's footage of her that just never got released, where she went on set and something just didn't feel right or whatever. And as we know, the show operates so fluidly that if things aren't working, then they'll shift gears. And again, we saw the same thing, that Charles Logan was probably meant to have a smaller role, that got bumped up, you know, as he moved through the series, because when something's working, they'll move on it. It really gets described as kind of an animal with moving parts that can be removed and shifted and put back in place. Oh, that's good. That's good. What else? We meet Cheng. Cheng's very mild-mannered in this season, right?
Right.
I wouldn't say he's a friendly guy, but he's certainly not. He's certainly not the guy you see later.
No, but he was. He felt. I commented about this, that he feels more terrifying when he's working for the Chinese government.
You're right.
And when he shows up in season eight, right?
Yeah, yeah, you're right. You're right. Yep, yep. Any thoughts on Cheng? Any thoughts on Cheng? No more thoughts. No more thoughts on Cheng. I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of Cheng too. I'm a big fan. Again, the more I hate a character, is the more I really appreciate how good they are at their job. Because like I said, like a Miles or somebody like that, they're just despicable from moment one. And that makes them really good at what they do.
I hate Miles more than Cheng.
I agree. And what sucks is that he's still alive out there somewhere. Probably
hope
working.
Hit him or something. I don't know. I hate Miles.
Why? Yes.
There is a question about Cheng here.
Yes.
After he discovered Jack Bauer's friend, Howard Byrne, I think.
Yes, Howard. Howard the traitor.
Did he let him go after he told him about Jack Bauer?
We don't know. You know, we can look it up, but I don't know that anybody has a definitive answer on that. That was quite the story, wasn't it? The idea that they captured Howard. Mm-hmm. And made him talk.
That's why I said this is the most complicated one.
Yes, yes.
There's a lot of lingering threads that they never really...
I think they let him go.
You think, though? It's Cheng, though.
I think so at that point.
You think they let him go?
Yeah. In my opinion, I don't think Chang was quite as evil then as what he later became to be.
What he grew to be.
But in my opinion, I just think that when Howard Burns said that Jack was ultimately the one that led the assault on the Chinese consulate. In my opinion, I don't think that Chang would have any more reason to hold Burn captive.
Yeah, I would.
Even though we don't really find out either way whether he's actually released or not, I'd just like to think that he was.
Yeah,
that's just what I think.
It really was a good contrast between Howard and Jack, because as we know, Jack had went through years without saying a word, as opposed to Howard, who folded. I don't want to say quickly, because I would have folded long before that. I would have been like, "Yeah, it was him. Yeah, I didn't. We're in torture. No, not seeing my family. No, no. Yeah, it was Jack. Here's his picture. Here's his ID." I would have folded real quick. So, but I'm not. I wasn't a trained agent, though, right? And I remember in that moment the extreme disappointment with Howard, in the fact that he folded the way he did and was willing to turn on Jack. As a fan of Jack Bauer, made me upset.
Chang knew that it was Jack. Remember that there's a moment when he was leaving CTU, and
yes.
He asks, what was his name? The other tech guy.
Edgar. It was Edgar, yes.
Yeah. Edgar's question. And Edgar gave him a vague answer.
Yes.
And that moment, right. Chang knew that it was Chang. Chang knew,
yeah. It's hard to get anything past Chang, to be honest, right?
Yeah.
But he needed to hear it from somebody, right? To be able to to put things in motion. Sure. Yeah.
If you noticed, Habib Marwan was really hard to catch.
Yes. Yes, he was. Yeah. Yeah.
The best villain, in my opinion.
He was a great villain, wasn't he?
Yeah.
What's funny is I read somewhere that Arnold Vosloo, who played Marwan, was only supposed to be, I think, in like 5 or 6 episodes. And they loved him so much that they made the entire season pretty much about him.
Right. Yeah. Pretty cool. Yeah. And I he does kind of the Hans Gruber exit to the show, where the bad graphic of him falling down on rewatch, as good as the show is, that graphic just doesn't. I don't know how they could have improved it at that time. Certainly now it would be a lot cleaner and a lot smoother. But his fall to his death.
It's not the best.
but he went on his own terms, and he was a really good villain.
He was true to the end, and he was always one move ahead.
Yeah. He was another guy that wouldn't have villain. He wouldn't have talked and gave up Jack if he was in that position.
Yeah,
absolutely.
What
and he was you know that they would never break him.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But one thing too.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay. Well, and whenever you see Marwan speak, if you look at his eyes, they're always like, just like very sort of ice cold, and he just has that look of determination, like all the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very resolute.
And no matter what anyone does or says or anything, he you know, he knows what he's going to do, and he's gonna do it.
Yeah. No, one
of my favorite things from season 4, I believe we haven't really talked about it a lot, was the Araz family storyline.
Right, yes.
Seeing it, that was the first time, I mean, the Warners, you kind of in season 2 kind of got a little bit of their insight on their personal life, the wedding and everything. Yep. But I think seeing it from Baruz's point of view of living in a family like that, and then what his mother did to his girlfriend, obviously, you know, by killing her.
Yeah.
And also Shora, I can't pronounce her last name, but the Dina Araz.
Dinner Rice, yeah.
Actress. Love her and anything she's ever done. I mean, her voice is just like you're like, oh god, like I don't want to mess this lady off, you know.
But exactly.
What was everybody's thoughts on that family? I was actually one of my, I know a lot of fans hated that storyline because it just was kind of like took away from Jack and everything. I personally liked it. I like seeing the bad guy's point of view in a way, you know, if that makes sense, because I'm more of a villain person myself, weirdly enough.
Yeah, no, it's Jerry Springer could have done a whole show on, you know, father, or, you know, parent-child relationships based on this season, because you had that relationship of, you know, I'm committed to the cause, but this is my son. And it was that conflict that certainly, you know, worked for us in the end, right? That she was so, you know, bonded to her son, to the exclusion of everything else. But then you had the other parent-child relationship in that Nabby. Season, which was, well, which was Heller. The Hellers was a different... You had, this was, I call it the first of Heller's goodbye messages. Heller's been primed to die several times throughout this series. There's three that I can think of right off the bat. But this was the first time you saw him tell Audrey I love her, right? That whole, like, they're going to take me out and this is going to end. I'm done, right? And so you had that relationship where Jack was kind of a foe to Heller because he was dating his daughter, right? The whole notion that they were together, as much as Heller was a big fan of Jack's, it still was, you're dating my daughter. Like, you know, there was that protection. And we don't know, as far as I know, we don't know anything about Mrs. Heller or what the story was behind that. Unless I'm missing details somewhere. But we don't know really what happened to the mother. We just know that those two are extremely close. And the relationship between those two colors many seasons of 24, certainly to the point where Jack confronts Heller at the end of season 6 and just lets him have it.
And let's also not forget... Sorry.
Go ahead.
I would say, let's not forget that in season 4, James Heller's son Richard goes through quite a bit throughout the season.
Yep. Absolutely, yeah. Richard Heller is a fascinating character in that and his role in that, and fascinating character. Yes, Richard Heller should not be forgotten for sure.
And it is also another character we never really got any closure about.
Right.
As to what happened to him after season 4.
Exactly.
It's like towards the end of the season he appears in an episode or whatever, and then that's it. You just never hear the name or anything again.
And what's interesting, as you said, is that I didn't hear about him acting in many years, and then I was watching a Netflix movie that just came out last week, and he's one of the main characters in this Netflix film. I'll pull up the name in a minute. It was like, I know that guy, but I haven't seen him in over 10 years. So just like Richard Heller disappeared, I think the actor disappeared for several years too. But it was good to see him again.
What was the name of Heller's son?
Richard.
Richard. At first, I confused him with the kid from Live Free or Die Hard.
Yeah.
I thought it was him in the beginning.
Oh, the son?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 I can see that. Yeah. Yeah.
But no, also the rescue of the Heller rescue.
Yes.
That was a big moment too.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Heller was kicking ass, man, with the AK. He was blasting people left and right, you know.
Oh yeah.
It was good. It was a good, that was a good moment.
The action sequences seemed to get bigger. They maybe weren't, they were a little more few and far between, but then they were bigger in scope. Certainly, I think with the season before when they did the planes flying into the and bombing, I'm trying to remember what it was, and like in downtown Los Angeles or something. That was one of the biggest stunts.
That was season 3.
Yeah,
they were getting Stephen Saunders.
It was Stephen Saunders. Yeah, that's the waterway. Exactly. There was that moment, but that upped the game, I think, for season 4. That obviously the stunts have got to be bigger and a little more, you know, a little more money given to make them happen.
I think they actually used, if I remember right, in the season 4 special features, I could be misremembering, but I think they used the actual military, helped with that the scene from season four.
They did, like,
yeah, they actually were, you know, actual military helping them do the helicopter scenes and stuff, which was really cool.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that. I remember that. Yeah, cool. So yeah, that's the, again, those parental relationships that certainly affected season four and then affected further on. The, you know, do I support the cause? Do I you know, let go of the cause for family? And family certainly came up several times throughout mm-hmm. that season.
So. Navi was willing to go all the way.
Yes, yes. Navi was willing to go all the way.
But not Dina, you know, when it was her son.
Yeah.
She motherly instincts took over, yeah.
But still, when she wanted to rescue her son, and if her son wasn't rescued, she said that she was happy to see the reactors melt down. You know, yeah. That was scary.
Yes. and as Keith said, the way she said it still gives me chills. When you said that just now, I remember exactly her line as she delivered it. It was like, ooh.
There's so much venom coming from her voice.
She means business. I'm gonna I'm the mama bear gonna protect my cub, but you take that away. Maybe that's why Baruz was kept alive, because if he had died, all bets would have been off. I think we know that from her resolve and from just the tone and the look that the combination of the tone and the look that she had that just made her such a great character.
And not just any person looks at Jack in the eye and threatens him.
Most are afraid to. Most are afraid to look Jack directly in the eye. I was a little nervous when we talked to him. I was like, oh, just on Zoom. So crazy. Anything else that jumps out that really stood out to you for season four?
The fate of Baruz Arraz.
The fate of Baruz, yes. Yeah, we don't know, right? We don't know. Yeah. Maybe he and Richard Heller have, you know, formed a business or something. I don't know. Well, I'm going to read.
Ryan?
Yes.
See you in the next meeting.
Oh, yeah. Are you heading out?
Yeah. I'll bring my banjo.
Oh, okay. All right.
Nice.
All right. Well, we'll catch up with you later. See you in the next meeting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much, guys. It's been a great pleasure to be joining you.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Talk to you later. So I'm going to read a quote. I read one of them already because it came up in the conversation about Tony coming to the rescue. Here's one I'd like to read and what your thoughts on. My husband and I are very fond of Baruz. He's one of the few boys who seems to know the meaning of please and thank you.
That was Debbie's mother.
That's Debbie's mother. Debbie's mother. What are your thoughts on that, knowing what we know now?
Well, I liked Baruz, and like Keith mentioned, the storyline of the Arraz family was very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
insight what it looks like to be, you know, a terrorist planning, you know, their tasks, because of that they were separated from different other cells, you know, that were working together. So, but Baruz was different.
Yes,
you knew it from the beginning. But I thought that I would see him more committed to the cause. Would have been more interesting, I think.
Sure. Yeah. No,
but he was definitely affected by Debbie's death.
Yeah, yeah. I think what she said was right. Like, when I read that quote, I was like, they are fond of him. He's one of the few boys who knows meet, please and thank you. Like, he mm-hmm. came across like a really nice kid who had these parents who had other plans, clearly.
Right.
And I'm glad we didn't get to see what the couple would have looked like if they didn't have Baruz. Like, I think, you know, as we saw, as the quote that you just gave, that she was ultimately committed to the cause, and the only thing that was keeping her from just giving in completely was her son. So if you had taken him out of the dynamic, you would have had a whole different season. You know,
without Baruz, the Arras wouldn't have been that memorable, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. All right, I'll read the next one. Oh, go ahead. Sorry, you're going to say?
What was everybody's thoughts on the last scene of the season? Like the cliffhanger, if you will.
Shanghai. Now,
to me, well, of season four, yeah, where basically it was, for all intents and purposes, Jack Bauer is dead.
Right. Yes. Oh, sorry. I jumped ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
I jumped ahead.
And I remember seeing that and I'm like, where are they going to pick this up? Like, how? Like, from now on, I mean, to the world, he's dead, you know? Yep. And what was everybody's thoughts on that?
Well, that was, that's exactly why I think the MVP, and I'm sorry to be ahead of on this discussion, but the MVP for me in this season is David Palmer. Right? Jack is alive because of him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You had the relationship. Their relationship was based on keeping each other alive. Right. Certainly, Jack's ultimate goal was to keep David Palmer alive through season one, which obviously he was successful in doing. But that went back and forth. There was the relationship between Jack and David Palmer was such that they really did exist to keep each other in play.
Despite the last conversation they have, you know, it's very touching and emotional.
It is, yeah. Especially because we don't know what's ahead. Mm-hmm. We have no idea what's coming when season five hits, because we don't even know that was the last conversation they were going to have. Which is, you know, again, when you go back and watch that conversation, it carries so much more weight now that it really. Highlights the relationship those two have and how much they really relied on each other in many ways. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. One of the unique things about the show is how they played those interactions and those relationships in almost like in a brotherly way, relying on each other, which you don't see a whole lot on TV. It's certainly not at that time. Definitely. Definitely. No, that was really, Dennis Haysbert just played that so well. And you know, after he had just come out of being harassed and belittled by Charles Logan, right? The unwilling heir to the throne, trying to tell him how to be presidential was almost laughable. It was almost laughable. Which brings me to my next quote. It's also no secret that your presidency was infected with a certain level of paranoia and scandal. I won't allow that in my administration. Do you remember that quote from Charles Logan?
Yeah.
That to me, that was the kicker before season five. Like, season five didn't exist. But when he said that to David Palmer, who had acted with integrity in almost every scenario that he had, and you saw that Charles Logan was Charles Logan.
It didn't fly.
It didn't come across as it sounded like a terrible threat. I won't allow that in my administration.
This is after, you know, he gives the blame to everybody else. Yeah, you know,
yeah.
I'm not taking blame for that. You know,
so. It's you. Else can I blame for this? Yeah, yeah. We're gonna blame Jack Bauer. We're gonna pin it all on Jack Bauer. Because the other conversation that happened in that whole thing was the idea of what would happen. Walt Cummings says, "What would happen if Jack got into an accident?" Right, mm-hmm. and Logan's initial response was, "We can't discuss that. You've offended me by even hinting at that." While he's really saying, "Just take care of it." Like it's Walt right. Cummings, just take care of it. Just take care of it. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it really is offensive knowing David Palmer and knowing Charles Logan. And we haven't known Charles Logan very long, but we already know that the fact that he said that he had the audacity to say that to David Palmer was just a kick in the head.
And also Logan blew up the whole arrest of Marwan at the club.
Yes, yes, he did.
He wanted to take Jack Bauer in, you know.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Good. The last one I've got, Chloe, I can't do this without you. What do you think about that from Jack?
Well, Chloe,
that's obviously the beginning of their relationship. I mean, for the most part. Mm-hmm. Remember, season three, he couldn't stand Chloe for the most part. I mean,
he
at her all the time, you know, and everything. But yeah, I think that was the beginning of like, okay, this is the change of Chloe. So
even Chappelle hated Chloe in season three.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it really is. I mean, Chloe pulls some stuff too that keeps her employed. There's several points in her time at CTU that where she pulls some blackmail type stuff out on people. And I'm trying to remember, was it Sarah Gavin or if it was, but there was something she said to her that said, "Well, I covered for you in this, and if you want me to tell them, then I, you know." It's like Chloe has Chloe has her moments.
There was this girl, but it was in season five. So the one that Miles Papazian had harassed, supposedly.
Yes.
Who's crazy.
Yes. Was that
I forgot the actress.
She's a big actress. She was on House of Cards. She was on, right? Is that Kate Mara? No. Sorry. I know exactly who you're talking about, but yeah, she made accusations against who was the, was it wasn't Miles.
Oh, I'm going to look it up.
Yeah.
And there was a comic moment when
Chloe got in her face.
Yeah. No, but also Bill Buchanan, he was like, "Good job," you know, pat on the back. She was like, did you see how he touched me?
when Jack really meets Chloe, as you said, he doesn't really know what to make of her. Right, like when that's, which is probably why she was only supposed to be on for a short period of time.
You were correct, Ryan. It was Kate Mara.
It was Kate Mara. Okay. Yep. Okay. Yeah, I thought it was. I thought it was Kate Mara. But yeah, it was really interesting that the relationship between Jack and Chloe at the very beginning of when they met. He needs somebody who can just commit, get it done, you know, no wavering, and Chloe's not that person. So it's really, like, to me, when he said that to her, "Chloe, I can't do this without you," he realizes that he has to have somebody on the inside, in the same way that he had Tony to come to the rescue and back him up, that he really can't completely do this completely alone. He needed, and as we've saw over the years, that Chloe was his person that backed him up, that believed him. And that was often criticized by him. Like there's several points where he gets borderline, "How did you screw this up?" And she stuck with him, which is pretty amazing. And so William,
you know, as being his only friend.
Yeah.
Right. Eventually, she was his only friend.
Yeah. She ended up being his only friend, and again, who didn't shed a tear at the end of season 8 when they say goodbye to each other? If somebody didn't cry, they probably have no heart. Like, I remember just kind of being like, "Are they really? Oh my gosh!" Like I wasn't bawling, but I shed a tear. I was crying. And then, like, skipping ahead again, spoilers are all over this thing. He comes out of hiding, complete hiding. Like season 4, season 5, he was in hiding, but he jumped out of hiding because things were threatened. And things happen, but he comes out of he's completely off the grid. Like by Live Another Day, he is completely off the grid. He is unfindable, but he comes out of hiding just to save her.
Yes.
Right? Just to get her out of the torture that she's in. So it's fascinating to me that this is where we start to see that relationship really start to gel. And you start to, that quote that he says really carries so much more weight in light of what he does by Live Another Day for her, right? Or even the conversations that they have in season 8. Those are some heavy conversations he has with Chloe. I mean, there's a lot going on there. She's shot in the leg, the whole deal. Anyway, yes. Anything else we missed? Anything else that we need to cover about season 4? Because as we said, there was a lot and several things I forgot. So I really appreciate having these panels to remind me, "Oh yeah, Mandy came back. I totally forgot about that."
Well, there was Erin Driscoll, her daughter.
Oh, also, yeah.
Arianne Taylor. Yeah. She was trying to frame Sarah.
Those are big stories. Both of those, right? Erin wound up leaving CTU because of what happened with her daughter. Yeah.
And she was telling Edgar to let his mother go, you know, and then her daughter dies.
we didn't even talk about Edgar's mother. Oh yes. My gosh! Like
that was a tearjerker.
Yeah, it was. It absolutely was. It's extremely ambitious to try to keep a conversation about a particular season an hour and a half, because, like I said, those are three major plot points that we haven't even gotten to.
I remember right too. Isn't season four the only season to not have a silent clock? I believe it is. I'm trying to think.
I think you're right.
I think that's the only season also that did not have a silent clock during the entire season.
Season one was Terry's death.
Terry. Season two was the Palmer.
Mason.
And Mason. And
Palmer. Right. Season three, Ryan Chappelle.
Yep.
But I think season four has no silent clock.
I think you're right.
I've had a few. And then every one. So, for whatever reason.
Yeah, yeah. And, of course, Jack's dead. I mean, presumed dead at the end. Like, we see the switch out. But only the how many people knew about it? About Jack getting away? Four.
Yep.
Yeah, right. Four people. Not even Buchanan knew what was going on. Mm-hmm. So that's where we're left as we end season four. Jack is off the grid and in hiding and in danger of being turned over to the Chinese consulate for invading the embassy. And again, we didn't even talk about invading the embassy. The actual act of, you know, I said the big things, that the kidnapping of the Secretary of Defense, taking down Air Force One, and storming an embassy. Those are three things that are...
And if you think about the importance in the entire history of 24, mm-hmm. storming that embassy...
Yeah.
Is what was the launching point for season 5, 6, 7, 8, yeah. 11, another day. I mean, if that moment in time, if you think about it, didn't happen, mm-hmm. it changes the entire...
The whole thing, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, obviously Ching wouldn't have known who Jack Bauer was or cared, you know, so it changed the whole thing.
Well, changed Cheng's life, that's for sure. There'd been no oil rig, there wouldn't have been any of those things.
Right.
Well, if there's anything else, this has been a lot of fun. I enjoy doing these things, and I hope you enjoyed today our freeform discussion about season four and how many things happened in 24 hours. It's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. So, any closing thoughts?
I can't wait to do season five.
All right. Same. Awesome. Mike, how you doing?
Doing good.
Good. No, this is I was telling the authors, I said it's kind of like speaking Klingon. You know, we used to see people go to Star Trek conventions and they were learning conversational Klingon, and I go, well, why would you do that? And then I start talking 24 and I say Dina Arraz, and I say, you know, I say Chloe O'Brien, and when I'm with a group of people that know exactly what I'm talking about, it's a beautiful thing. And all the gaps that I forget, you guys fill those in, which is fantastic. So I appreciate you doing this, taking the time to join us, and look forward to talking about season five.
Cool.
All right.
Thank you, Ryan.
Have a great day.
Typical barrister.